Welcome back, everyone, to another lively and informative episode of Nest in Style, where we bring you home and garden tips for seasonal living. I'm Jamie Jenkins of ahamodernliving.com.
And I'm Teresa O'Connor from Seasonal Wisdom. This week, listeners, we're going to talk to you about a really important subject. It is actually National Farmers Market Week, isn't it, Jamie? And remember, we went to that farmers market together in Eugene, which was killer.
I know.
What a great market.
Yes, we had a lot of fun, and there was a lot of good food there and a lot of craft, so it was excellent. But before we get into that, Teresa, you know me, I love to do my announcements. So just a couple things to say before we get into the farmers market week.
Go away.
Yeah, okay. So first off, if you haven't visited the website yet, folks, we have a new website, and it is www.ahahomeandgarden.com, okay? And that is where you will find a lot of the resources we talk about on our podcast. We will put on the podcast page, so that's where you find the Nest in Style resources. Secondly, I just want to say thanks to everybody who has participated in our Canning and Preserving book giveaway by Lorene Edwards Faulkner. So the Facebook people, Twitter, blog comments, it's all been really, really fun in chatting with everybody and what they're preserving this summer or, you know, this
season. It's been great. It's been just great to see what people are preserving up there. Elderberry jam and cantaloupe jam and, wow, stuff I'd never even heard about. You don't see in stores, you know?
Well, definitely. And I think one of the, I can't remember her name off the top of my head, but she was making a dandelion jam. I mean, go figure.
I know.
It's really, people are really, really creative. Anyway,
that's great.
If I could just repeat, the contest deadline is August 5th, 2010, because you might be listening to this a year from now. So sorry if you are and you missed out. But anyway, just to remind everybody, we will be announcing the winners. We're going to be giving away 3 free books to people we have chosen randomly. Okay, we're not picking favorites. And so I just want to make sure everybody knows that. All right, there we go. Announcements are completed. Thank you.
So let's talk about food, our favorite subject.
Yes.
And, you know, that to have food, you need farmers, right? And sometimes we tend to forget that in this modern age. And that is really a problem. Now, you know, if that was the topic that I covered in Grocery Gardening, the book that I co-authored with Jean Ann Van Crevelin, Amanda Thompson, and Robin Ripley. And in that chapter, I wrote about how important it was to support your family farmers and why that mattered to the economy, to the environment, and also to your health. Do you remember that, Jean?
I do. I remember that subject. And you had quoted a statistic that I thought was really interesting, that if you purchase produce from farmers directly, like at a farmer's market, they can earn up to 90 cents on the dollar. But if you purchase produce from a traditional like retail outlet, like a supermarket, they only earn 20 cents on the dollar. I mean, that is a big difference.
I know. It's really amazing how little they earn. So I think that the more we can get to know our farmers and support them, it's critical. And I went to visit the American Farmland Trust website, and they are the national leader as a nonprofit organization in working to protect and preserve farm and ranch land in the United States. And that is very important because get a load of this, Jamie. In America, every minute, we lose 1 acre of farmland. That means in a 60-minute episode, we've lost 60 acres. So what does that basically mean? That means that between the years 2002 and 2007, that's 5 years, we lost more than 4 million acres of farmland, which is the size of approximately Massachusetts. It's a little under the size of Massachusetts. That means in 5 years, we've lost enough farmland to fill up Massachusetts. Now, I don't know about you, but I don't know where people think the food's going to come from. And another thing that I found really disturbing was that most of the food, the fresh foods, the vegetables, the fruit that we love, comes from land that is very close to housing developments. And that land tends to be the land that is most in danger of being developed because it's flat, it's well-drained, and it's relatively cheap. So that's what's happening. And it's not a matter of population growth in this country. It's a matter of using land inappropriately. And what we need to remember is that only a small percentage of farmland in this country is fertile. And so when we use our fertile land to just build a housing development, we're taking away the opportunity to provide ourselves with local fresh foods. And that's the bad news, but there are a lot of good news. And there's a lot of things you can do to support your family farmer. And that includes shopping at farmers markets like we did, Jamie, or getting a CSA membership. And I get into a lot of those topics on my blog this week on Seasonal Wisdom, and we'll put a link to that. And I give a lot of resources that you can contact. And I know you mentioned a magazine you had found very helpful recently, Jamie, on just learning about local foods in your area.
That's right. And actually, one of my customers from ahamodernliving.com actually brought it to my attention. And it's called Edible Communities. You can find it on ediblecommunities.com. Basically, the founders of Edible Communities, Tracy Ryder and Carol, I don't know how you say your last name, so I'm not even going to try. They created a publishing and information service company to connect consumers with family farmers, growers, chefs, food artisans within the communities that they live in. So let's say if you live in LA, Seattle, there's just tons of communities across the United States and even in Europe, okay, where you can subscribe to a local magazine that talks about all the local businesses in your area.
And they have beautiful food photography. I mean, they call it food porn. It's just gorgeous of heirloom eggplants and
I know
weird things you've never seen anywhere before. So
yeah,
it's lovely.
So the closest community to me is Portland, Oregon, which we'll get to that because the two guys that were doing Bike Lock, they ended up in Portland, right? So we'll talk about that in a minute. But one of the featured recipes was a spiced ketchup. Okay. I mean, we're coming right into tomato season. So it looked like a really interesting recipe. And it's a great way to control the flavor, avoid preservatives like corn syrup, for instance, and extend the tomato season. So preserving your local foods is a great way to extend your harvest.
Absolutely. And are we going to have a copy of that recipe on our podcast page, Jamie?
You know, I don't know the copy, you know, rights of all that kind of stuff, but I'll definitely have a link. For sure.
Oh, and we'll have a link right to the Edible Portland page and all of the different ones because they have them everywhere from Brooklyn, New York to Ojai, California. In fact, I think the Ojai, California one may have been the first or one of the first because I used to live right nearby there. And they are very, very active local foodie advocates in that area.
Yeah, so, and you know what I think is really cool about this organization is that they provide resources. So let's say, you know, here in Eugene, I mean, we're obviously very active in our farmers markets and buying local foods, and we have a lot of farms in our area, but we don't have an edible community magazine, but they allow you to start one up on your own. So really, there's no excuse to say that I have no resources. You know, you can start one up yourself, and they help you do that, which I think is really cool.
I think that's really, it symbolizes what's happening in the local foods area is that this is a grassroots movement. And I think that's a perfect segue into our next topic, which is Bike Lock. And this is two guys that Jamie was just referencing, two men named Robin DuBois and Aaron Suick. And they took it upon themselves to ride across the country in support of local foods. And they contacted me on Twitter and asked me if I would help to organize a potluck in Boise. And with the help of a young woman named Rachel Kynaston, and the support of people like the North End Organic Nursery and Idaho's Bounty, which is an online service where you can order all these cool meats and produce right from Idaho and they deliver. So it's a really great organization, as well as the Treasure Valley Food Coalition. We had a lot of support from these sustainable community connections and these groups. And so we had about 42 people show up at the North End Organic Nursery to meet these guys. They've been, you're going to hear all about the interview and what they're doing, but we were just all very impressed. And what was cool, Jamie, is that there were people there from locavores to TV people to food producers to just ordinary citizens that had read about it in the newspaper or seen the poster. And they came and brought something to eat that had at least one local ingredient. And it was coming together as a community to show support for something that we all feel passionate about. And I just wanted to say before I got into the Bike Lock interview that I have a lot of people who follow me who are foodies and farmers, and they represent the full spectrum of the political arena, as you can imagine. And one thing that we all agree on is the importance of eating good food. And so the more we can communicate with each other and understand each other's needs and stop criticizing each other or thinking that all farmers are bad because they're not necessarily organic, or all foodies are left-wing pico commies, you know, the more we can all realize we agree on a lot of things. And that was what was so wonderful about BikeLock's trip across the country, which you're going to hear about. So just a quick word about this BikeLock interview, Jamie. We were going to do it down at the Boise Co-op, which is a very good locavore grocery store in our area. But unfortunately, it didn't work out for unexplained reasons. So we had to go to the Anne Frank Human Rights Park, and we found a nice shady spot to do the interview by the river. But you're going to hear an unexpected a little surprise in the interview, and I just wanted to mention that. Hi, everybody. I'm sitting here right now with Robert Du Bois and Aaron Zueck, who represent BikeLock. And they have been riding their bike from Vermont to their final destination, will be Portland, Oregon, all in support of local foods. So we're delighted to have you on Nest in Style, you guys.
Thank you. Very delighted to be here.
So you guys were just living your lives, and you decided you were just going to take this adventure. What was the spark? What really made you decide to do it?
I think both of us are avid cyclists where we live. This is Robert. I live in Washington, and Aaron lives in New York. And we had thought about doing this cross-country bike trip for the last couple of years, but wanted to combine it with a project. And we're both really interested in what's going on with the local food movement, food in general, and so we thought this would be the perfect marriage to potluck across America on our bikes.
So is that the reason for your name, BikeLock?
Yeah, so we actually, it's spelled Bike L-O-C. We wanted to include the local component in there. And then we pronounce it BikeLuck, as in potluck. So it sort of brings together potlucking across America and keeping the local food aspect in there as well.
That's great. And so when did you actually start your trip, and where did you start it from exactly?
We started around April 24th, I think, and it was in Hardwick, Vermont, where there's a lot of local food action happening.
So this is kind of like an epicenter of local foods, would you say, this Hardwick, Vermont area?
Yeah, without a doubt. A lot of farmers there are all working together, supporting one another. They realize that there's a lot of value in for their community when they support one another in their agricultural pursuits. And they're also doing a lot of innovative projects regarding value add and other things. They're building one of the most innovative state-of-the-art experimental test kitchens in the U.S. right now.
Ah, see, you have to do that when you have those long winters. You got to be innovative, right? So you guys have, you're almost done with your trip. When do you think you're going to hit Portland?
We're going to hit Portland in about a week and a half, which is about August 8th.
August 8th. So as you ride your bikes along this trip, who have you been meeting with? What are the, mainly farmers, food producers, that kind of thing?
Yeah, so we've been meeting with, it feels like a huge broad swath of the local food movement. We've met with urban gardeners, people who've turned a parking lot into a community garden. We've met with farmers out in the middle of nowhere. We've met with people making interesting things happen in cities, such as restaurateurs or pretty much everyone. It seems like we've seen a little bit of everything. But the one redeeming quality is that every new city we come to, there's a new surprise. So
you're pretty much seeing this kind of across the country, this whole love of local foods kind of growing, would you say?
Oh yeah, without a doubt. We can definitely feel the momentum of the movement. We even see it in more advertisements along the way, which I think is one indicator that some of this local food is now being used for marketing. So it's sort of, you know, I guess local food washing, whereas it was greenwashing before. But we're just meeting a lot of different individuals with a lot of different business models, a lot of different CSA models, distribution models, canning models. Seems like everyone wants a little piece of the local food movement, which is a wonderful thing.
That's, I guess, where you get all that innovation, right? With people kind of brainstorming. So I guess for all the bikers out there, like, what bikes are you guys riding?
So we're riding Surleys. They're made by a small company in Minneapolis. They kind of specially engineer all their bikes to very specific tasks. So mine is a Surly long haul trucker, made just for touring. It's basically like your standard road bike, but beefed up in every way, more or less. And then Robert rides Crosscheck, and he pulls a trailer behind it. So it's a little bit lighter duty bike, but he's got the big beefy Bob trailer, so
that shows his weight.
Yeah. So Robert, how come you got stuck taking the trailer behind you? Did you arm wrestle for this or what?
Yeah, we played tic-tac-toe, and I actually bought the trailer because I want to be able to haul things when I get home, and so having a big, nice trailer makes my lifestyle of, I guess, using a bike for all my transportation even, I can realize it even further with the trailer.
Yeah, it's more practical, I guess. Uh-huh. So tell me about these potlucks. Are you meeting with, it sounds like you're meeting with a lot of different types of people, but are the potlucks different sizes too? I mean, or do they vary by city, or what are you guys finding?
Yeah, we've seen a broad swath of different types of potlucks. I think every one has a different size, for sure. We've had potlucks as small as 8 or 10 people and as big as 60 or more. Mm-hmm. But they all have their own sort of personality. If it comes from just the space that it's set in, we've been in giant warehouse-style greenhouses. We've been on community garden plots. We've been out on farms. And then to the people that are there. It's been pretty interesting to see how each one takes shape.
Yeah, I guess so. And it also depends on what happens to be seasonally available right then, too. Do you find that you tend to eat the same kind of foods on different potlucks based on the time of month?
Without a doubt. I think one of the most popular ingredients has been rhubarb along the way. And rhubarb and strawberries, we saw those come into season. And I mean, we actually see a lot of different types of dishes at the potluck. Certainly some similar ingredients. Not all ingredients are locally sourced. We kind of encourage people to use local ingredients. It's just the spirit of the dish. It certainly doesn't have to be. Really, the idea behind it is to get people thinking a little bit more about where their ingredients come from. And so that's what we're really trying to do.
Well, at the Boise potluck, I can say we had every type of bean possible. From lentils on down. So I guess, you know, it just kind of depends on what is around. But you guys are definitely eating your vegetables, I'm sure, on this trip.
Just a comment on that. I think not being from Idaho, we always thought that the main crop out of Idaho is potatoes. And we didn't even know that lentils are grown in northern Idaho. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I think a lot of people don't know. It's sort of one of those hidden secrets about Idaho.
Yeah.
There's a lot of them.
Yeah.
So, like, what have been some of the surprises that you've found along the trip and things that you never would have expected that you've experienced?
Aside from lentils in Idaho?
I know that was a big one.
I was very surprised. I think before the trip, Aaron and I, neither of us did much gardening or farming ourselves. Certainly food consumers and had done a lot of research around local food, but when it came out to getting our hands dirty, we didn't have a lot of experience. And when we were in Cleveland, Ohio, we ran into a woman named Megan Kresge, and she was working on developing a community garden with two other women, all built on asphalt. And they weren't using raised beds. They had just put some mulch down, spent a couple of years letting it break down, and then put some nice soil on top of it, and have now created a complete permaculture-based garden. It's an educational space where people can come learn, where they can harvest a few CSA shares out of. They have a salsa garden. They have a number of chickens there as well. And it was just amazing to see that in this small little space where you never think you'd ever see any sort of green eking out of the asphalt, they had a complete garden.
You can just do it anywhere, I guess. So when you're planning this kind of trip, I mean, you must have had to spend a lot of time on logistics and training. How long did it take you to train for this kind of trip, but physically wise?
Well, besides riding our bikes to work every day, which we had done anyway, Robert came to visit before our Brooklyn launch party up in New York from his home in D.C., and We did one, I think, 30-mile-ish ride through Brooklyn and Queens to the Queens County Farm to glean some food from there for our launch party. And that was about it. The first couple weeks of the trip were really the training grounds, and it slowed us down a little bit. Had some sore knees and very fatigued muscles, but we're strong now and able to pedal all day long.
How long are you guys riding for a day average?
Our initial goal at the beginning of the trip was 70 miles a day. And I think at the beginning we were trying to shoot for that. First couple weeks, you know, we were doing 30, 40 miles in our training phase, but we tried to ramp up after that. But we found that our route is really dictated by the towns along the way. And so if there's a town in 30 miles, we might stop. If there's another town in 20 miles after that, we might stop. So that might be a 50-mile day. Right. Or if you're in South Dakota or Wyoming, towns might be 80 or 90 miles apart. And so you're going to have an 80 or 90-mile day. Mm-hmm. And it depends on weather conditions. Our longest day was 132 miles in Colorado. Wow. And one of our shortest days, I mean, I think we just recently did a 20-mile day. So it really varies a lot, just depending on the weather conditions and the towns that you find.
What about, like, places that you've stayed? I mean, you've probably stayed with some of the people that have held the potlucks, but have you found yourself having to sleep in a yard or whatever on the way?
Yeah, so we've stayed in quite a broad array of different places. We've been camping quite a bit, especially here in the West, where there's all these wide open spaces and beautiful rivers and things to sleep next to. We have had a few times where we've had to knock on a door when the sun was starting to go down and we still didn't have a place to stay, and politely ask if we could throw up our tents in someone's backyard, which is a difficult thing to do. But I think just in staying with people along the way, it's added so much color to the trip. And you get when you pull into a town, you have your notions of what it is just by looking at things, but when you get to talk to someone and, you know, sleep in their house or on their lawn and maybe even share a meal with them, you learn quite a bit more and things you never would have picked up on otherwise.
So. Is there any one thing that you'd like people to take away from after traveling around the country and really being focused on this topic for, like, you know, 3 months? You guys have kind of given up your life and everything. What does it all mean?
That's a really good question.
Yeah. It is a good question. I think...
I have to tell you, listeners, all these girls are walking by in bikinis, and these guys are doing a really good job of not even noticing. They're continuing to stay on topic. It's great.
Got focus here. What was the question? I'm just kidding. I think one thing that we have definitely learned is... that local food does not stop at the farmer's market. Oftentimes we associate local food with the farmer's market and being very expensive and you only can get it one day a week. But we've seen increasingly local food found in supermarkets or the ability to purchase a CSA or buying some vegetables and canning them and using yourself over the winter. And I don't know, thinking it a little bit more of an everyday and sustainable way, and that it's really doable if you have the right resources in town or if you plant your own little garden in the back. And also that planting a garden is not very hard. No matter the soil. We saw someone planting a
After riding across country, having a garden's a piece of cake, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So let me ask you this. How are you guys getting home?
I'll be getting home the easy way. Over 3 months to get over here to the West, and I'll be flying back to Brooklyn in 3 hours or so on Friday the 13th. So wish me
Yay,
luck.
Yay, that's great. What about you, Robert?
I'm planning on, at some point, watching the trip in rewind on a train, and I'm not sure when that will be. When we finish in Portland, I'm going to ride down the coast and then work on a farm for a couple of months in California.
Oh.
And after that, I'm not sure what I'm doing yet. So
Where are you going in California?
Well, I'm going to go to San Francisco just briefly to see a couple of people. We might have a quick potluck there. And I'm going to be woofing, and I've emailed a number of farms within an hour or two of San Francisco.
Great. Well, I wish you guys the best of luck. Thanks so much for everything you're doing, and thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks, Teresa.
Of course. Thank you.
Teresa, I think you kind of maybe bribed those guys with the little girls in the bikinis. No, I'm just kidding. That's what happens when, you know, you do an interview in a park on a nice sunny day, right? You're going to have girls in bikinis. But anyway, they seem to stay on topic. It was cute.
And if I hadn't said anything, Jamie, no one would have known. But it was just hysterical that they were just so focused on what I was saying. And here suddenly were these two really beautiful girls in bikinis walking by. And I thought it was a testimony to how dedicated they were to local foods.
Yeah, they were definitely good boys. Anyway, I just love the idea of the potlucks that they did. And you mentioned them, that they had to have at least one ingredient of a local food, which is really cool. And what a great idea for a potluck in your own backyard.
Absolutely.
Gather your friends together for a barbecue, and everybody brings, you know, something from that they've harvested in their own garden, or something that they bought at the farmer's market. It's a great little theme, kind of a party.
And, you know, that's a really good point you brought up, Jamie, because several of the people who came to the Boise potluck said that they had a local war club that they had started, and it got so big they had to kind of stop membership because they had like 35 people, and that's too hard for people. But they said they really encourage people to start them on their own, where you're actually visiting with local farmers or making a point to go shopping at the farmer's market that morning, whatever works for your group. And it's just a way of celebrating where our food comes from every day.
If I could just mention a book that might help bring this whole idea of the locavore way to people who are new to this concept, you know, I sell a book by Amy Kotler, and it's called The Locavore Way: Discover and Enjoy the Pleasures of Locally Grown Food. So Amy is, you know, she is a cooking teacher, and she has over 30 years of professional experience in the culinary industry. The book is really great because it's for novices as well as for experienced foodies. You know, it's it's basically making you aware of all the resources around you. And Amy has a really awesome blog as well, because she actually has 5 cookbooks. Okay, and right now on her blog she has a really super delicious tomatoes Provençal. Am I saying that correctly? Provençal. It's made with multicolored heirloom tomatoes and basil from the garden, and then sprinkled with some cheese before you pop it into the oven for about 10 minutes. How easy is that?
Oh, it sounds great. Well, yeah. Good. We'll have a link to that too.
I will.
So what's next? What's coming up next, Jamie?
Well, how about we finally do Yvette Solar?
Yvette has had more promos than anyone else on this program. Yvette, I hope you appreciate that. And we are going to really feature your interview, because you're in conjunction with a little report we're doing on Jamie's yard. And we're really delighted to show the viewers Jamie's incredible backyard that she practically built single-handedly herself. And thank you so much for coming and listening to the program. And again, the next time you bite into some of your food, give a moment, think about where that food came from, and think about how your purchases can determine and support your community. Thanks for listening, and go grow something.